Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Freedom!
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. And tonight we're on an open show with my co-host, Tommaso Vincenzo Giuseppe Bonvissuto.
That's pretty good, Drew. Getting better.
I'm getting better. I'm still a little slow, and I don't have the voice for it, but I enjoy having you here. He's living well, as usual.
Oh, yeah.
And Drew's view. I have an interesting, one I just wanted to talk about. I saw another colleague of mine had a notice that was sent to some people that he knew who said that PNC Wealth Management was going to raise their fees.
Yep.
And I saw that, and I'm thinking to myself, the trend in the industry is to lower fees,
yep.
period, lower fees. So if you have anybody that you're working with that is raising their fees, you should be absolutely enraged and just fire them and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the fact that, you know, it's lower fees and more service and more quality of advice. That's the trend in the industry.
Yep.
And if you're working with an advisor that's telling you they want to raise your fees and they're not giving you the absolute full comprehensive advice in the highest quality that they can, you need to move on. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a disparity between what the professional advisors are doing and what other firms are doing, and they're looking at it from a profitability point of view. Let's put it that way.
That's exactly it. I mean, I worked 26 years in that environment in financial services, banking, and for sure that was the mentality of the management was to raise fees. That was the way they were going to get things done. And, you know, frankly, there's a lot of clients that just are not paying attention to it. You know, they've got trusts where the client's dead and the banks are operating that or there's just an amount of inertia, that
and
clients
they know
don't
that.
Move.
And they know that.
Exactly.
And so what
and they
I'm...
count on a certain number of people leaving that are sensitive to fees, but they figure, well, even if they leave, you know, the rest are going to go and stay, and they're going to get the increases that they need and hit the numbers that they want to hit. And you see it in the publicly traded companies especially because there's so much pressure on them for earnings and profitability. And to your point, the industry, fees have been coming down, whether it be at the mutual fund level. I look at commission rates. Commission rates years ago were, 25 cents a share. Now they're down to, 3 cents a share at most of these firms, that are trading, in the institutional side of the house. We've seen a lot of changes and a lot of pressure to push fees down. We've seen that as we've negotiated with the custodians that we work with, the ability to push fees down. And technology has helped a lot of that.
Yeah.
Has moved things along more quickly. But it is flabbergasting that these organizations continue to try and raise fees and provide lower service in many cases.
Absolutely. And, what will happen is some bigger clients will complain and they'll make an exception for them. And to me, you shouldn't even accept the exception. You should just move on. Everyone should just move on.
Right.
Look for somebody who's willing to say, hey, this industry is changing. Technology is forcing fees down with more service.
Right.
That's what the industry is all about.
Yeah.
And that's what everyone should be doing, whether you're a big bank providing wealth management services, or you're a firm like ours doing it, or you're a brokerage, a wirehouse,
right,
or whatever.
Yep.
It should be more independence, lower fees, higher quality of service.
Right.
That's the industry trend. And that's what our listeners should be looking for if they're going to look for advice, you know?
Exactly.
Anyway, we're on an open show tonight, Thomas. 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And Lee's on the line. He called in before the show even started. He wanted some advice so bad.
That's great.
We're going to get to him in a second. We'll just say again, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you'd like calling and ask your question, And Lee in Towson, how can we help you?
I wanted to ask a couple questions. I guess it's about 20 years ago I bought the Legg Mason's Value Trust.
Okay.
Did I read somewhere that they have it's no longer with Legg Mason, but it has a new manager?
Well, you would know that better than I would, Tom. What's the story
there? We were just talking about that
Bill
fund,
Miller doesn't
fund
manage it anymore, does he?
Yeah, well,
I've
lost track of the details of that, but, Legg Mason's obviously a local firm. They've done a great job over the years, but they have had some, changes in management on some of the funds, and Legg Mason Value Trust is one of those that they occasionally have made some fund manager changes. So I'd have to check to see the exact manager structure of that. But Legg Mason owns a variety of different managers out there under different brand names that all roll up into the Legg Mason, family of funds.
Well, I don't think it is with Legg Mason anymore, because anyway, somehow or other, my shares ended up with Smith Barney.
Well, so what happened was is Legg Mason had a brokerage operation, and that did get separated and over into the Smith Barney world. So there's different parts of Legg Mason out there. There's the Legg Mason that was the brokerage arm, I guess that was the Wood Walker piece, and then there's the Legg Mason, and I think they call it Global Asset Management now, that manages the mutual funds under the Legg Mason brand. And as I said, they have other funds or fund families that they're affiliated with that all roll up together.
So, Lee, your fund, custody of your fund, and the brokerage firm that's custodying your fund is now Morgan Stanley, which Legg Mason Wood Walker's brokerage division went to Morgan Stanley. It went to Smith Barney first, then to Morgan Stanley. But your fund is still run by the Legg Mason management, which has changed their name to something, as Tom was talking about. But I do believe didn't Miller leave or something like that?
I think he's gone.
Yeah. I can't remember because I never liked the fund to begin with.
Anyway,
but anyway, that's another story.
Legg Mason was telling me it's only a Morningstar 2 rated, but I was thinking if it has a new manager, maybe it might do better.
Yeah, well, you never know. It's you really have to study that manager and what did he come from and what did he do and so forth and so forth. But you could just buy an index fund and do a lot, find an index fund that duplicates a lot of what they own and get it at a lot lower cost and pretty much duplicate what that fund has done.
Do you have an example in mind?
Well, a lot of his fund was like a NASDAQ-oriented fund. It was it was heavy tech-laden, just the S&P 500. He claimed that he beat the S&P 500, and as Tom was telling me just the other day, he beat the S&P 500 from a January-December point of view, but if you looked at it from a February-to-February point of view, he probably didn't beat the S&P 500, and he only beat it by a little bit, even if you looked at it in the one. So, just owning an S&P 500 fund, you're going to be darn close to, even if he does, did do well, you're going to be darn close to what that would do, and you're not going to have those weird years like he had just in 2008, 2009, and so forth, which had taken a long time to recover from.
Yeah.
Right.
Lee, I just looked up a little bit of information. It looks like they added another brand name onto that called ClearBridge Value Trust.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're seeing it come up under, the ClearBridge name?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So, and the gentleman running the fund is a guy by the name of Sam Peters, and they brought Sam in several years back to be part of that team and has taken it over. I've met Sam; he's a smart guy, but as Drew said, you've got to figure out how it fits into your overall portfolio. The fund, I haven't checked out the expense ratio lately. It used to run at a pretty high expense ratio.
That's what they were telling me. I was just talking to 1.7% for the A-class.
No, well, that's because they give a 1% kickback to the broker that sells the fund to you.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, he's retired.
Well, still, there's another broker that took over
somebody's
getting
that getting
money.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Lee?
That's a good gig.
Yeah, it's a good gig. You can get it, brother.
All right,
anyway,
man.
Lee, I appreciate your call. It's a good question. take care. We've got to go to Maggie Hunter, but before we do, I just want to say it's an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, but right now we're going to find out what's happening with traffic. Maggie, take it away.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBS.
That's a Santa song, eh? All right. You're getting in the Christmas mood there, eh, Noah? A little early still, but that's okay. We're on an open show tonight, and the phone number to call in to be a part of the show is 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in, there's a couple lines open. And always early in the show is the best time to call and get your question asked. We do have Mike on the line, so we'll go to his question. Mike, how can we help you?
Hello, Drew. Hello, Tom.
Hey,
hello.
How you doing, brother?
Thank God.
How you doing? I'm doing good. Good to hear your voice again.
Thanks. And I wanted to call in when you had the philosophical organization that was speaking.
Oh, last week, yeah, the Baltimore Community Foundation.
Right, because what you said goes even farther and deeper, with, maybe you don't know it, but of course, tithing is something that is biblical.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yep, giving a tenth of all that you bring in as income. And so God says, this is one thing you can do. You can test me. If you tithe, I will make you rich.
Yes, well, he sort of says that, but we're not going to go into a biblical debate of that right now, Michael. So ask your question.
You can see it by Jacob that he did much better.
I'm very familiar with the book of Malachi, so go ahead.
Okay. So now, about the question I called in on.
Go ahead.
I heard more than one expert speaking about that the most of the bank owes you is an IOU if anything should happen to its operation. They'll just hand you an IOU, and that's the end of your money. Can you be more specific and go in more depth of what that means?
So when you give your money to a bank, so I go into a bank, and I say to them, here's $100,000 I'd like to deposit into my checking account, my CD, my money market, whatever it is. The minute I do that, I have lent my money to, you know, Bank of America, PNC, or whatever the case may be. So, in essence, all you have is an IOU from that bank, Bank of America, PNC, or whatever. It's their money, but it's borrowed money from you. So on their books, on their accounting, they say, well, this is $100,000 is Michael's money, and this $100,000 over here is Drew's money. And so, therefore, we're accounting for it. But as far as it's considered, it's technically our money now. The banks, they can do anything with it, you know, based on rules and regulations the government has laid down for the banks, and they have to have certain requirement of capital that they can get quickly and all this kind of good stuff, et cetera, et cetera. If the bank goes under and they don't have enough capital left to pay off all those IOUs to all those depositors, then you are absolutely correct. All they say is, sorry, here's my IOU that I owe it back to you. Now, that's when the FDIC steps in. And the FDIC steps in and says, wait a minute, the United States government is unconditionally guaranteeing your $100,000 as long as you're under the insurance threshold. If you're not, then you're subject to the IOU of the bank. They liquidate the bank. Any extra money is a percentage that you would get back.
And most people forget that FDIC goes up to $250,000.
Well, it could be $500 if you're a joint account. It could even be a lot more if you have beneficiaries on account. So if you set up a TOD, a transfer on death, and I have four beneficiaries, technically I have $1 million of insurance on that account. So the FDIC insurance is $250,000 is correct, but it's complicated depending on the ownership of the account as to how that actually would be insured.
Well, all I have to say is I'm glad I'm in the same bank as you. My money's over there, your money's over there, and so I think I'm safe.
Well, my money is always kept in Schwab Bank, which is a virtual bank, Schwab Bank Corporation out of Nevada, which is just strictly an online virtual bank. Because, you know, those online virtual banks, you know, they really don't do a lot of crazy stuff. So the chances of them ever saying they don't have the money to pay it back is very small. And, you know, Schwab sort of stands behind that, Schwab Corporation. And then I have the FDIC. So I'm not too concerned. So hopefully you're in Schwab Bank also, Michael.
Well, I guess I should be if that's where you are. Just tell me what you do and I'll imitate you.
All right, buddy. You take care. Good talking to you. And one day we will talk the Book of Malachi together. Anyway, you want to get that line 2 off there. I don't know how it got. All right. So I'm going to line. Line 1, there we go. Thank you, Noah. I'm line 1. Mike in Park Heights, how can we help you?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you doing again this evening?
Okay. We're doing well. And you?
Wow. Oh, good. Look, you probably don't remember, but a couple weeks ago. But let me first start with this. Where is the Dow sitting at now?
I don't know. Where is it, Tom? 17?
Yeah, well, the Dow's been, you know, S&P regularly hitting new highs. Dow's at 17,912.62 at the end of today.
Okay, good. Now, the reason why I ask that is, maybe, let's say, a couple months ago. Anyway, what we had talked about QE.
Right.
And how the market got jittery every time we talked about eliminating QE.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was trying to explain to the audience that what it is it's psychological that the market needs to know that GDP is at a sustainable level for the banks to loan money and for the economy to grow. Now, a couple months ago, I don't know exactly what week, the Dow touched 17,150, and it tanked.
Right.
That was resistance. So I'm in an investment group, and I told the guys in my club that if we cleared 17,350, then we were off to the races, because that was resistance. Now, we've done that. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is we were also talking at last Saturday's meeting, where is resistance going to be on the way up? And I was telling them, I don't have any indication, and I was going to ask you, do you?
Well, you see, when the market breaks out to new highs, all-time historic highs, you don't talk about resistance anymore because there is no resistance. It's at an all-time high. What you talk about is if it breaks through support. So what you look at when you're at all-time highs is to say, if this breaks down below this support, and you look at your charts and you choose a number. This is if you're doing technical analysis. I'm not saying I'm 100% on board with technical analysis, but if I'm doing it, I'm looking for support now. I'm no longer, there is no resistance left. And unless you break through support, then you've got to break back through it. It becomes resistance once it breaks through support. So you got to go look for your support. Let's say it's 16,680. Let's just use that number. So if it breaks through 16,680, that becomes resistance, and it's got to break back through that to be able to propel and then break through the high again, which is the final point of resistance. Once it breaks through that, there is no resistance. You're only looking at support.
Okay, now I got that. I just wanted you to explain to the audience because I look at the 13 EMA. I also look for down days on large volume, and I look for market leaders to take a dive. You know, I look for where the trend is going, and right now I just wanted you to speak about.
Well, you see, this is an interesting question that you are not asking, but is do I really believe that technical analysis is worth it? And the answer to that is I believe it has some value, but I'm not convinced totally that there's a substantial value to it. I prefer to just find investments that I like, and I just buy them, and I hold them, and I'm watching for general, bigger picture things that would make me want to change my opinion as to what I'm doing.
Okay, and I wanted to say this real quick. I'm in support of what you teach and what you say. And I encourage people who aren't going to get into it to find a good advisor, or if you want to do it yourself, pick good mutual funds with good 10, 15-year track records. So I'm just encouraging people to find a good advisor as well. I just wanted to let you know that. So
yeah, I appreciate that.
What I do.
I always appreciate talking with you, but right now I got to take a break. Is that okay, my friend?
Yes,
all right, you take care. All right, we'll look forward to it. And we're going to... I'm taking a break, Noah. I'm not taking a pause this time. I'm taking a break. Maggie Hunter in traffic, take it away.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Noah, a little early. I understand. I understand.
It is December, and today is Jeff's birthday at the office, so happy birthday to Jeff.
Is that a shout-out?
That's a shout-out. He's having lobster for dinner tonight. That's what
All right.
So,
yeah. Lobster is good if you eat shellfish. I don't eat shellfish, but I used to like it when I ate it. I can't eat it as much anymore. So, anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, these weeks that we set aside as open shows are for you to control the discussion that we're having. If you don't call in and ask your question, you're just going to have to listen to what other people want to talk about. But if you have something on your mind, 410-922-6680. Washington in Pasadena, how can we help you?
Yes, good evening. Are the three wise men there today?
Yeah.
Well, at least one and a half. Thomas is one. I'm the half.
Oh, I thought Chris was there, too.
Chris is not here. That was only last week when we were doing some pictures and we wanted to have the full contingent here.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay. So the two wise men. Okay.
That's right.
Hopefully this is a relatively easy question. You were talking with one of the callers about virtual banks and that you like them and they have their purpose and everything.
Right.
Now, the question is, not everyone can join a credit union. If you belong to a credit union, and let's say you move out of their service area, but you can still belong to them, is there any benefit one way or the other to converting to a virtual bank versus staying with the credit union?
Well, that's an interesting question. First off, credit unions have become so open that they come up with these unique things like, you know, for example, I'm up in Hunt Valley, and Point Breeze Credit Union used to be solely for Bethlehem Steel, right? And now they're open to, there's so many different categories that I could become a member of Point Breeze if I wanted to.
Right.
I think it's just because I'm a Cockeysville-based business. I can become a part of it now.
Yep.
So, you know, first off, a lot of credit unions are available. For example, MEQ, Municipal Employee Credit Union, of Baltimore City, anybody who has any connection with the city, like in other words,
work in the city.
If you live in the city, if you work in the city, if you have a parent or a child in the city who lives in the city or works in the city, you can become a member. It's ridiculous. So most credit unions, Washington, people can get to become a member of a credit union. The only thing you need to look at from a credit union versus a virtual bank is who's giving me the most services for the best value that I'm getting. And value comes from no fees or low fees, number one, no fees or low fees, and number two, rate of return on my money that's sitting with them. And one of the things I like about the virtual banks is that they pay me interest on my checking account. Am I getting a lot of interest right now? Not really. I'm getting 0.1 or 0.2, but it's at least interest. And if rates go back up to 3 and 4, when I first started with virtual banks, I was getting 4.5%. In addition, I went in to get money out of a ATM machine today, and I get every ATM machine in the entire world for the last 8 years that I've been using a virtual bank. I've gotten every fee that's ever been charged to me for the last 8 years, and I bet you anything, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of a few thousand dollars, because I just did my balance my checking account today, and we had fees of about $12 or $14. So $12, $14
a month. Yeah.
A month, that's a couple hundred bucks a year, maybe. 8 years, $1,600 I've got back in ATM charges. And, you know, I mean, you can't beat that. Also, it's almost impossible to bounce a check in a virtual bank if you have a brokerage account or something else attached to it. I've not had any problem with that. So that's what you're looking for, Washington.
Okay.
And the sense of safety, they're basically the same as long as you stay within the insured limit. FDIC and who the credit unions are guaranteed by are basically the same thing. Unconditional guarantee from the United States government since George Bush Sr. who did that. He put the he said there's an unconditional guarantee of the United States government. It was an implied guarantee before he said that. Anyway, Washington, good question. You
well,
take care.
Much.
All right, buddy, take care. And Tina in Pasadena, how can we help you?
Yeah, my question, and I've heard you talk about it before, but I haven't heard the whole answer. So I'm worried that the stock market has hit the highs. And I have money in stocks in there, so I'm afraid of the risk that I have. So I wonder if I could move. I'm in my 50s, so I would like to move some of that money to something safer, but still get some kind of rate of return. So I was looking for what you would recommend.
Well, you know, I'll just tell you an interesting statement on that, and that is, you know, would you say Warren Buffett's a reasonably good investor?
Yeah.
Okay, so Warren Buffett's a reasonably good investor. And so when the market starts doing this and he says, you know, I really can't find good ideas and I'm taking some money off the table, et cetera, you know what he does? He sits in relatively short-term, very low or no-yield investments right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's been known to sit in Treasury bills yielding 0.05% for a year or two or three, waiting for another opportunity to go back in the market. Now, with your statement, though, Tina, you should never get out of the market 100% unless you have a sound, economic reason that you're concerned that the market is absolutely in serious economic trouble, and that only happens once every 50 or 60 years, but you know, if you wanted to pull back 20 or 30% of your equity investments and sit and wait because you think the market's too high, that's what Warren Buffett does. But it may take a year or two to do that. If you try to find any kind of yield on that money, you're definitely going to have to take some form of risk.
Yep.
Yep. What do you think about the annuities? I hear different annuities advertised on the radio where if you put
those,
so much money in, you're
all smoke and mirror, all a bunch of misleading information. Those are designed to make money for the broker who sells them and the insurance company who markets them to you. If you think that there's an insurance company that's offering you a great opportunity, then I've got a bridge to sell a client who believes that there's an insurance company out there that has your best interest in mind and can do what they say, which is, I'll get you a good rate of return without any risk of the stock market. It's impossible. It cannot work economically. There has to be a lot of misinformation in there that's leading people into thinking that they're doing this. And insurance companies have one incredible advantage over investment firms, and that is they can say things that investment firms can't say without being considered illegal.
Yeah, so Tina, I'd add to that. You know, as Drew said, you know, anytime you hear something that sounds too good to be true, it is.
Right.
You know, it's too good to be true. And I think, you know, as you look at, you know, funds, you may want to look at it in different buckets. And if you're working with a financial advisor, they've probably already done this. But, you know, the reserve fund that you have shouldn't be in the market to begin with. So you should, you know, make sure you have a reserve fund. If you're saving money for a car, you're saving money for some intermediate expenses, you know, whatever that might be. You know, that should be more conservatively invested. Your retirement dollars, that's the one where you want to keep, you know, probably your greater equity exposure. But you know, a lot of it has to come into staying the course, you know. And to your point, at least you're making this call while the market's higher. You know, it's understanding your emotional reactions to how the market might move and what you might do with it. But to Drew's point, you know, you probably don't want to be out of the markets entirely. But you also want to look at your different portfolios and different buckets that are out there.
Right, because I got burnt in 2008, and back then I had quite a few more years to work. But now as I'm getting closer to retirement, I'm really starting, especially with the highs that the market's hitting, just think it's too good to be true. So you would think, so we have some limited choices of funds. I am invested most of my money in Fidelity through our 401k at work. So you would suggest maybe moving to some bond funds or things like that are a little bit...
Well, you have to be very careful about bond funds because a lot of people don't realize bond funds can lose a lot of money if you don't know what kind of bond fund you're in and what makes those bond funds go up and down. So, you know, before you make a decision, you better make sure you understand, well, what kind of bond fund is this and what makes it go up and down. So, for example, Mm-hmm. Let's say the market does take a big nosedive and you invested in high-yield corporate bonds. Well, high-yield corporate bonds tend to follow the stock market. Mm-hmm. In 2008, high-yield corporate bonds were down 25 to 28%. Mm-hmm. And so you could have missed the market downturn and caught the high-yield corporate downturn.
Right.
So, you know, on the other hand, U.S. government bonds were up a good bit in 2008. The difference was that interest rates were a lot higher in 2008, and they came down, and that's what makes U.S. government bonds go up, is when interest rates come down. If interest rates were to go up in the next market down move, even U.S. government bonds would lose money in that scenario. So you have to understand how bonds operate before you make that kind of a decision. What you need to do is what Tom's saying, is understand what you own and understand your strategy and make sure that you're moving into a place that is going to achieve your goals and objectives. And so I guess one thing I don't know what I would say because I don't know what her choices are.
Right.
So,
well, and you might have a stable value fund. There's usually a conservative cash or stable value fund that's an option. There's short-term funds. But I think the caution is, Tina, I mean, you're young, and you're going to need some equity exposure long-term in your portfolio. You just need to evaluate it, and you should spend some time, you know, on your own or with an advisor to really figure out your plan.
So
how you're going to meet your
objectives. And the other thing she has to keep in mind is, let's say she does the Warren Buffett thing and she moves 30% out of equities, mm-hmm. into the stable value fund. She's
right.
going to wait for the downturn. Well, you know, Warren Buffett knows when the downturn is and when to
right.
strike.
Right.
You know, most investors, when they get into those downturns and things get scary, that's when they say, whoa, I'm never going to put money back in the market.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're stuck there, too. So you've got to have that fortitude to say, well, when this happens, that's when I'm going to put this money back in the market, regardless
right.
how scared I might be.
Yep.
You
yeah.
know?
Exactly.
All right, Tina.
So if I wanted to get a financial checkup, you do that?
Well, we just, our trademark name is
yep.
Financial Physical. That's what we do.
Okay.
So
okay.
if you wanted to, you know, yep, our firm would be more than happy to talk with you.
So what's your, can you give us your phone number and contact information?
So our company name is Financial Consulate. So financialconsulate.com. Consulate like an embassy, C-O-N-S-U-L-A-T-E. Financialconsulate.com is our company.
Okay.
Go on there. You can learn all about us and find our contact information and so forth.
Thank you.
All right, Tina. Thank you.
All right.
And we're going to Mark Thibodeau and weather. Be back with our open show. Take it away, Mark.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. And this is a happy birthday to Jeff Will eating lobster right now.
That's right.
Right. All right, Noah. Don't get too carried away, Noah. He's probably not even listening. Anyway.
I have to listen to the podcast. Yeah,
I'll have
right.
to listen to the podcast, right. We record the show.
And speaking of podcasts, you know, clients can listen to shows. Anybody can listen to shows on our website, as you mentioned, www.financialconsulate.com, in case they miss a week and they want to listen to the open shows or some guests that we've had on, like had a great guest last week with Rebecca Rothy from the Baltimore Community Foundation. They can also follow us on Twitter.
And then they'll know every show, and they can get when the podcast is up and ready and they didn't hear last week's show, they can just go to Twitter and find out, they'll get tweeted when it's available as a podcast. And
exactly.
that's at the FinCon. At the FinCon. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, and also when we write articles, and we write a lot of articles that are published in, you know, Forbes and Money. I just did one with Money Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
We did one with the Hanover. We do them weekly or every 2 weeks or something like that in the Gettysburg Time and the Hanover,
Times.
What's it called? The Hanover thing.
Yeah, I'm not
the
sure.
Hanover paper. That's our Gettysburg office that does that. And I wrote most of those articles. We publish these in
right.
different places, Forbes, blogs, or, you know, we do those quite often. You know, when we do, we tweet it out. You know, here it is. You want to read it? You know, there's a lot of good information here.
Yeah.
So, and then we do our financial pulses. And if you want to get on that, you know, it just gives financial planning, market updates, all that kind of stuff. It's about 10 minutes, or you can just read the bullets or you know, the commentary that we write. Any way you want to do it, it's there and available, and you can get that at the FinCon. Anyway, we are on an open show, and we've got about 5 minutes left, but nobody on the line. So you get to ask the question, Tom.
Well, you know, Drew, we're going to the end of the year, and last week we talked about charitable giving, but are there some things relative to charitable giving or taxes, you know, things that need to be set up before the end of the year to take advantage of it? You can't wait till April 15th.
You know, the big one that, you know, if you're charitably minded and you're going to give something anyway, what should you give?
Appreciated securities.
Yeah, absolutely. And why is that? We were just looking at a client recently. He had a very highly appreciated security, and he wanted to do, let's say, $50,000 worth of a gift because he had a big charity he wanted to give to. And we looked at this highly appreciated security, and it was going to cost him between, for $50,000 now, it was going to cost him net between $22,000 and $25,000 to give away $50,000. That meant the government was going to pick up $25,000 to $28,000 of that gift for him. And so it really is only going to cost him out of pocket $22,000 to $25,000.
Right, because there's multiple tax savings, right? There's the tax savings on this year on the, against the income, but it's also the savings on if he were to sell that security and have to pay capital gains taxes on it. So it's a great time of year to, if you're giving anyway, you're charitable. You know, as you know, Tina was talking about earlier, the market's hitting new highs. You can go and you can give away that security. You've had to have held it for at least a year and a day. It has to be a long-term gain situation in order to take advantage of that. You could get to the Baltimore Community Foundation. So maybe you have a appreciated security. You don't know who you want to give it to yet. You don't know, you know, you don't want to give it all out in 1 year, but it's a good way to move out of that because you're a little nervous that the stock is a little frothy, as we say, and you want to put it aside. So that's a great opportunity for folks to give and to save on taxes going into the end of the year.
Yeah, and but you always have to keep in mind that, you know, giving away gifts to charity is not a a magic tax bullet. In other words, you have to be charitably minded because, like I said, it was going to still cost this client $22,000 to $25,000 of actual cash out of his pocket to make the gift. So that's still a significant amount of money, despite the total amount that he gave away. You have to be charitably minded to do this. And if you are, which I think is a wise thing for people to do, you know, Michael was talking about some biblical verses. And the Bible is full of verses that says, you know, when somebody is charitably minded, more so than he was saying that if you tithe, you're going to be prosper. But there are far more verses in the scripture that say if you give money to people who need help and cannot give you anything back in return, I'd say there's probably hundreds of verses stating that God will bless you tremendously when you give to the poor and the orphan and so forth. And so to be charitably minded, I think, is an incredibly valuable thing to anybody who's serious about their personal finances.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, my point to folks is if you're going to write a check, instead of writing the check, let's go ahead, let's give that appreciated securities, and it's going to help both both you and the organization.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And we do that a lot. But you got to get it done before December 31st.
That's right. You got to get moving on it.
No financial firm wants you calling on December 29th.
No, no.
And saying, give this appreciated the stock
That's
away.
Right.
Anyway, we're finished next week. I think we're doing another
open show.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
All right.
Talk Radio 680 WCM.